Talk given Friday, 14th December, 1973. We are approaching one of the supreme festival days of the world, the day which we call Christmas. What is the significance in depth of this day? The day which is treated as a holiday the world over, but which indeed is a profoundly holy day. Consider the time of the year first at which it occurs. Just about the time when we have passed the shortest day and the longest night in the northern hemisphere, and the sun is once more returning to us, and the days become longer and longer. The light has passed its dimmest point, so to say. We enter gradually into the darkness. Not necessarily the darkness of ignorance or evil, but into that darkness which we must enter in the religious sense if we are to re-emerge re-enlightened. And it is in the darkness that mysteriously all the creative living processes take place, uninterfered by us. That perhaps is one of the significances of this day. Of course, it's the reverse for the southern hemisphere. But we who live here will confine ourselves to the northern hemisphere. So this is the sort of day, as far as its place in the year is concerned, which we call Christmas. And it is the day on which traditionally Jesus, the son of Mary, was supposed to be born. All these days really are symbolical days insofar as they attribute the birth of some great teacher to the day. Who was this Jesus? Yahshua is his real Hebrew name. Yod, He, Shein, Vav, He, the spelling. And if you look carefully at that name, and bear in mind that the word name stands in a deep sense for the informing principle of the living being. That's the name, the nomen. And it was used in that sense right up till the Middle Ages. Then we lost it. after that. This name, Yahshuah, has a shein, the letter shein, between Yod He and Vav He, the famous tetragrammaton, the holy name of the Jews, the name which must not be pronounced, and which is the legacy of one of the world's supreme esoteric teachings, the Kabbalah. Now, this shein which unites the two parts, Yod-He-Vav-He, enables the enfleshment of Yahweh. We commonly use the word Jehovah, enables the enfleshment of Yahweh to take place. Otherwise, Yahweh is an abstraction and remains an abstraction. And Yod-He and Vav-He represent the physical and psychical aspects of our life, amongst other things that they represent. And the one is the container of the other, and they mutually fertilize each other. But the fertilization to come to fruition must have enfleshment. And the name of Jesus, Yod-He, Yahshuah, Yod-He, Shein, Vav-He, represents this enfleshment. So, this one is born, is said to be born on Christmas Day. It is not as if there is an entity, Yahweh, pre-existing in time and space. It is man himself, you yourself, I myself, who, having come to realization, then represent that which has been realized in the innermost depths of consciousness in these terms. And Yahweh or God or Ahura-Mazda or Brahman or whoever it is that we present is a projection out of our own minds and given a name in order to represent that which happens to you and to me in our profoundest fulfillment, in the full realization of our true humanity, our true humanness. We have become free of the bondage in which we live subhumanly and are at last free human beings. And then we talk about this in this manner. We must always bear that in mind. So now, this person, Yahshuah, a real person, a real human being like you or me, that is to say, the completely flowered, manifested being, the like of which you and I are in potentiality still. That's what I mean when I say he is like you or me. This being is born when, having entered the darkness, the quiet, the mystery, the light begins to re-emerge and to grow greater and greater. Now this is something most worthwhile meditating upon deeply. You have to do it by yourselves. When you have the opportunity, the inclination, let the mind be quiet. Body and mind be quiet. And just let the mind dwell upon the name, its significance. And in the quietness, which is the equivalent of the day, just having passed the darkest day, so to say, of the year, in that quietness, your awareness of the reality which this represents will intensify. This is real meditation, not going through a verbal ritual, not merely shuffling a pack of cards composed of concepts. Because our concepts belong to the past, something which we have seen, known, named, ticketed, docketed, tabulated, put in its pigeonhole. It's in the pigeonhole. Let it collect dust. Go on. Walk on. And the walking on is the creative meditating. You see, this is very important. You can always pick out any one of the concepts which are moldering away in their particular pigeonholes. They are merely a stimulus to set the mind ready for new creative activity, which is the living meditation. That is why we cannot discard concepts at all. The names of the holy ones are concepts for us. What do they mean for us? They are words, after all. They represent our mind projections, and no one else's. The name Yahshua may mean the supreme thing in the world for you, or it may not. Or it may mean whatever it does mean for you. But the meaning for each and every person will necessarily be different. And don't try to change that, thinking, somebody else has a better meaning. No, not somebody else's meaning. Because that will be just an image, an idol. No use. Let your concept be your concept. Vivify it with your energy, with your living, your life power. And then you grow spiritually. This is how we can deal with our concepts. Now remember, there is this element, the container as we call it, and there is that other element, the contained. In finality, they are identical. The contained makes its own container because it is primordial life energy. And it is perpetually creative. And in that creativeness, it resists itself and in the resistance makes limitation, by the resistance makes limitation, which is its container. That makes possible the thing we call knowledge for us at our level, at our ordinary, usual level. Now, when you go into deep meditation, you transcend your own ordinary, usual level. And you enter into the creative realm, where transcendent energy within you is now resisting itself, making its own container. And quite extraordinary things happen then. There is a transformation, a transmutation of your own psyche, mind in you, and distinctive of you and specific to you. There is a transmutation of it. This extraordinary process of purification goes on that way. These are the deeper aspects of the work of purification. And it has its reflection at our ordinary everyday level again in terms of the moral and intellectual purification. You all know what moral purification implies and means. The intellectual purification means becoming freer and freer of misconceptions, of distorted views and ideas and all the rest of it. That is what intellectual purification means. Becoming free of our biases, our prejudices, our preconceptions, and our assumptions. Because when you go through the discipline, the real discipline, along such lines as we are trying to consider, you will find that none of these preconceptions and assumptions have any warrant in truth. We tend to hold on tight to our preconceptions and assumptions, believing that this is truth, the truth. It is not. Every preconception, every assumption is formulated in words. And the whole realm of words and of conceptions is the realm of limitation, not the realm of freedom. Concepts and words come out of, they are thrown out of us by the creative activity within. And it is that creative activity that brings about that transformation of mind and heart, to which we afterwards give names: freedom, truth, wisdom, love, beauty, and so on. This is our great difficulty, is it not? That we are so caught up with the shadow, we are in a prison house which is built up of shadow stuff, to use a self-contradictory phrase. Shadow stuff makes our prison house. But by virtue of the fact that it is shadow stuff, it really is so easy to escape from it, to dispel the shadow, very simply by seeing the light. And the seeing of the light is something never formulated and presented as light. Every time it is formulated, If you have really become wise, you will know that this is a mere formulation, another shadow. There is no way of handing over the light to another. You can be the light, but you cannot hand over the light to another. You can hand over a shadow, a suggestion, a stimulation to the other. Yes, the shadow can stimulate. Then that is the work. So now, Christmas Day representing the birth of Yahshua, the enfleshment, the embodiment of Yahweh, the abstraction which represents the unknown, the supreme, the mystery, actually realized at last in the living being. The living being who is here. Now the living being is limited. He is finite. He is distinctive. He is distinguishable from everybody else. And he is mortal. That infinite is the immortal, the nondescript. And enlightenment and realization means precisely this, that we ourselves, when we awake out of our state of blankness, of ignorance, see that this thing, the body, that which is manifest, which is limited, finite, and mortal, is the very means, the only means, through which the infinite, the immortal, manifests itself, and is actually embodied in this which is mortal. You know how the Buddhists put it? Mahayana Buddhism, certainly. Nirvana is samsara, and samsara is nirvana. Realize the deep truth of that. And this realization comes in the quiet, when you are not wanting it, when you are not trying to grasp it. No grasping. You can't grab God or fulfillment or perfection. As I've said 1,000 times, if I've said it once, try and grab some space, a little bit of space. Can't do it. In the same way, we cannot grab at that which is the ungraspable. All right. Now let's return to the theme of that which is born or set to be born on Christmas Day, and it is a holy day. And why is it a holy day? That word Christ, which came into being after, with and after Jesus, as far as I'm aware, it has no place in the original Kabbalah as such. It is a new word. The Kabbalah knew and taught about Solomon's temple, the middle pillar and the two side pillars. And this temple is your own living body, remember. The middle pillar symbolically represents the supreme, unknown, unthinkable, indescribable, ultimate, which is associated with the head. The next stage on that middle pillar is here, at your breast level, which is the sixth sephira, Tiferet, as it is called in the Kabbalah. And Tiferet stands for beauty, harmony, justice. These are the things Tiferet stands for. And it is the mediator between mercy and stern judgment. The mediator. Bear that in mind. And Tifereth is regarded as the son of the Supreme Holy One. The Son of God idea of Christianity. And the Christ consciousness is associated with this center here. This is symbolical, remember, but it is a way of understanding. Now, as I say these things, try and feel them out clearly, very clearly and deeply. Beauty, harmony, justice, the mediator, the sun. Here is what is called the lesser Yahweh. The Supreme One is the entirely untouchable, unreachable. And you'll find that all the religions of the world in some form or other present this kind of thing. But its representative is here. It itself is incarnate in the Son. This is the Son of God region, if you like. It's rather interesting that it is at the level of the heart. And feel out the significance of that word heart for mankind. And the way the word heart has been used in all the religions, in all the scriptures, with respect to that innermost essence of mind within the individual, whoever he may be, which is utterly pure, untouched by evil, and in direct relationship and communion with the Supreme. This is very important. So you see, this which is the mediator is the means of contact with the Supreme. When the human being has become a fully human being, completely freed of all subhumanity, then the Christ consciousness has come to flower, to utter fruition. And you see, therefore, how salvation has taken place. Salving. Saving, healing, making whole, becoming the Holy One himself. The living Holy One on earth, representing the supreme and ultimate holiness which is transcendence itself. So there is your relationship. And it is all within us individuals, remember. It's not outside there or anything like that. It is within us. You find in Buddhism, look within, thou art Buddha. Realize the within and thou art Christ. Now, where does and how does Yahshua, Jesus, find his culmination? In the crucifixion, doesn't he? The culmination comes in the crucifixion. This which was body and which embodied transcendence now gives up body and returns unto pure transcendence. What is the real significance of this? You know how often I've said, saintship is the beginning of the spiritual life, not the culmination of it. It's the beginning of the spiritual life. And in that condition, one has become freed of all subhumanity, of all flaws. One is the true and full human. And then, at that stage, in that state, one is the body in the full sense of the word, absolutely pure. The perfect vehicle of transcendence. But it is the vehicle of transcendence. It is possible to go beyond whilst living in the body. You take, for instance, the corresponding teachings in Buddhism and Hinduism, in the deep states of meditation. You find in the Buddhist presentation the four jhanas, and then these four samapattis. You find in the Upanishads the presentation of the four avasthas, the first, second, and third, which are the correspondent of the four jhanas as such, and then that fourth state, the turiya as they call it, which is the entry into the transcendence. Buddhism has it presented rather more schematically, with their eight steps, and then the final, the ninth, the cessation of all perception and feeling, in which, as the Buddha said, you touch nirvana with the body. You touch nirvana with the body. That saying of the Buddha gives you the hint, really, to understand the meaning of the crucifixion. Having realized full humanity, and in that state of purity and perfection, manifested the will of the Father, as Jesus used to say. What my Father wills and Father desires, I do, you see, and that sort of idea. And the Father is that. You see, having done that, then one moves out of this realm of manifestation into the realm of the unmanifest itself, in consciousness. And still maintains physical life. There are those who, practicing this sort of meditation, have sometimes lost their lives. They cannot come back. And the body perishes in consequence. So, you have to cross the abyss. This crossing of the abyss is a most fearsome thing. The Kabbalah presents that abyss in the region above Tifereth. The great Christian mystics have talked of this abyss. In Buddhism, you have this entry into what they call the plane of no thing. It's usually printed in the books as nothing, and it is always misleading. It is no thing. And bear in mind the denotation as well as the connotations of no thing. That is, it is not limited, finite, mortal. It is not that which is shaped, formed, has dimensions or measure. It is the immeasurable. Not to be confined within the realm of concepts and therefore of comprehension as an object of knowledge. But you're fully awake in that state. And this is your something like your plane of no thing, as the Buddha called it. And then he talks of neither perception nor non-perception. He uses the same word, perception. Why? Our word perception, whether it be in the Pali or the English, it's all the same. The word perception is the wrong word there, because we think of perception in our way. The percept born of sense function. And when the act of comprehension follows, because the percepts are repeated over and over again, then when we see something or hear something or touch something, we recognize it, and that is the perception in that moment of experiencing. It's not that perception at all. Nor has it anything to do with this feeling which is present. It's a mental phenomenon, of course. This feeling when we say, oh, I feel it in my bones. Oh, I had an intuition. I had a feeling of so and so. Which is a touching by the mind, of which seeing by the mind is the counterpart to perception. Seeing by the mind is perception. Touching by the mind is feeling, is it not? It has nothing to do with this. This neither perception nor non-perception at that transcendent level has gone quite beyond that. And then finally, the cessation of all feeling and perception. So you see, you cross an abyss. The words are poor. But if we use words, we are always in the realm of the finite. We can never escape that. You must remember that. Excepting the words which contradict the finite, like infinite. That's all. But then there is no meaning. You can't conceive the infinite. And yet you know the truth of it. Because you know the finite. And you are contradicting that finite. And it's become the non-finite. So that crossing takes place. And it is this act of crossing where all body is left behind, is given up. The crucifixion means killing the body, doesn't it? It was a form of execution, sentence of death of the body. And body stands for limitation, for form, for that which is mortal, that which is subject to decay, to ill, to dis-ease, to evil. So you see what crucifixion implies? In terms of the deeps of consciousness. See, if you can really sort of get this, you will see why the theistic religions have presented God as the absolute good. There was no option to that. So, you see, your superficially clever intellect will say, oh, why, couldn't you just as well say that God is the absolute bad? Well, the superficial person can say it. But it is meaningless. It is untrue. Because when you have gone beyond this and in consciousness realized it, in this state, this mode of awareness, which cannot be conceptualized and formulated verbally, when that has happened to you, all that is represented by body has undergone death. Finitude, limitation, imperfection has undergone death. Return from that state of consciousness, that supreme state of awareness, and then you have resurrected, risen up again in the body. Because you're back again in the world of men, using your senses, your discursive mind, and so forth. This is the resurrection. Actually, I always say, the ascension takes place before the resurrection. You have ascended from this, by virtue of the crucifixion taking place, to the Supreme, and then when you come back into the body has resurrected. This is the meaning of the resurrection of the body. I think Christendom, of course, do remember, I may be wrong, completely wrong. You must feel it out for yourselves. But this is how I see it. Actually happening. Every day, every moment, it happens. But it's happening in every moment is closed to our mortal eyes. I'm using the word eye both literally and metaphorically. It's closed to our mortal eyes because our attention is distracted. So now, there is the culmination of Yahshua. In that crucifixion. So we see, perhaps, in a deeper way, why Christmas Day is a holy day. Why Easter, Good Friday and Easter Sunday are holy days. Because here the fulfillment of holiness, the complete fruition of it, takes place in our life here and now. As represented in the life of the person who has been known through history as Jesus Christ, as an actuality. Now, if that one actuality took place, just as the actuality of the enlightenment of the Buddha, or many such actualities did take place in human history, If that one actuality has taken place, it is the promise of redemption for anybody and everybody. Now you see how the teaching is presented. Believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved. Now what is the meaning of the word believe here? To believe can you imagine what that word means in this context? I mean, to have complete faith in transcendence, not in the perishable. This is the important point. And how do you have faith in transcendence? Never by conceptualizing it. Never by attempting to form a relationship in imagination between separate self and an entity which is transcendence, but by being awake to the fact that transcendence is the totality in which one is completely subsumed. It is an of course-ness in which no argument takes place. No doubt enters. Start by questioning it. Not by carping criticism, not by cynical doubt and all that foolishness of the vain, egoistic intellect. But question it. What is this? Question it that way. What is this? Discover it. But discover it not by pursuing anything, because you can never pursue transcendence. But the intensity of your longing makes the thing real to you. Come to light and life, and it'll stand before you. It will not merely stand before you, in front of you. It will go right into your body. This is Yahshua, the enfleshment of Yahweh. And this is how faith in its innermost reality, the indefinable, indescribable reality, comes into being. You know, all the great spiritual teachers emphasize the necessity of having faith in them, as the word, as the scriptures put it. But we humans, we mortals, have misunderstood that. We think of having faith in Jesus Christ, in Gautama Buddha, as a person like John Brown or Mary Smith. No, not in that sense. But they were transcendence embodied. Just as you and I, in actual fact, are transcendence embodied. But they were transcendence embodied in perfection. That embodiment had nothing in it to sully it. It was perfect, it was pure. See? That happens. And then there is faith actually present. An operative spiritual energy which continuously transforms the whole of the psyche and the body. So, to believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, or to have faith in the Buddha, or whatever it is, this is something, as far as I can see, of its real inner meaning. It is useful to take advantage of the different times of the year when these great festivals, as we say, occur. It is Christmas. Christmas is approaching. And you see, the thought and feeling of millions of people is turned in that direction. So the psychical atmosphere is favorable for meditation of that sort. When Vesak comes along, it is favorable for that sort of meditation, and so forth. But let it be real meditation, and entering into the state of communion, where oneself is empty, transparent to reality, entirely resilient, unresisting to transcendence. And then there is meditation, in the real sense, the samadhi, the supreme togetherness.